Fisher Body Historical Team interview with Harold Brown, Workers' Compensation Chair at UAW Local 602. First interviewer, Marilyn Coulter.
John Fedewa.
Linda Johnson.
Kathy Berry.
Cheryl McCoy.
Mike Fleming.
Doug Rademacher.
Doreen Howard.
Harold, can you please state and spell your name for us, please?
Harold E. Brown, H-A-R-O-L-D. Middle initial E, Brown, B-R-O-W-N.
Can you give us your address, please?
1525 Pierce Road, that's P-E-I-R-C-E, Lansing, Michigan, 48910.
And your gender?
Male.
And your national origin?
Black.
Okay. Are you married?
Yes.
And children?
4 kids.
Boys, girls?
Or? 2 boys and 2 girls.
Okay. Your education background?
High school diploma, various classes, Lance Community College, various classes, United States military, as well as UAWGM classes.
Mm-hmm. How long did you serve in the military?
4 years.
Okay. All right. As far as your history here at Fisher Body, do you remember when you hired in?
Yes, I do.
And that date was?
Was 1994, January. 90. Excuse me. Yes, 1995, January.
And now, is that your Lansing Fisher Body plant or in General Motors period?
No, my original seniority is May 28th, 1985.
And that started where?
Is GM service parts operation here in Lansing.
And what made you come to Lansing Fisher Body?
Well, I had, in 1992, I had to take a, what you call a 96 move, a transfer to service parts operation, SPO GM in Pontiac. Mm-hmm. And my 96 move came through in December. We was out on Christmas shutdown, and my 96 move came through the mail. So starting January of 05, I was to report to Fisher Body.
Okay. Can you tell us what a 96 move is for those who don't know?
96 move is anytime your work leaves your original plant, you have the opportunity to transfer with that particular work. We had work here in Lansing that left and went to SBO Pontiac.
And SPO means?
Service parts operation.
So you went from a parts plant to an assembly plant.
Yes.
What was the big difference from that, and what was your first day like here?
Well, the big difference was in the parts warehouse, it's like the best way to describe it would be like putting spark plugs in boxes. Very non-labor intense and clean and quiet and everything that assembly plant is not.
So in 1994, you come to Lansing Fisher Pass.
Yes, I arrived at the North Gate, and a particular supervisor met me there at the North Gate and escorted me to M Trim. And I was on 5 jobs in 3 hours.
5 jobs in 3 hours. Now, do you remember who the supervisor was who escorted you to your job?
Yes, I do. His name was Don Lee.
And so how did you happen to do that many jobs in such a short period of time?
Well, when I initially came into the plant, he put me on a job in the M-Trim and kept me there for approximately an hour and came to the consideration that I was too tall for that job, so he put me on another job. And it went on like that for about another 3-4 more jobs, and finally he came to me and asked me, on my last job, I was putting a piece into the glove compartment box, and he asked me that if I have gotten that job yet. And I thought he was joking, and I finally realized that he was serious. That, and he said that the person that did this job prior to me was 50-some-year-old lady, and I should have had that job by now. So I finally figured out that he was for real and not joking, and that's when we had a conversation.
Was it a pleasant conversation or a heated conversation?
Well, I told him since he was scrutinizing me doing my job, that now I had the opportunity to scrutinize him doing his. And he asked me, what do I mean? I said, well, let me explain it to you. I said, first of all, from the time I walked into this plant, you have not showed me any safety. You have told me where when breaks are. You have not told me where plant medical was. You have not gave me any of the prerequisites to bring me into the assembly plant. And at that particular time, we was nose to nose and toes to toes. And everybody on the line said, call the committee man. And I said, that's all right. I can handle him myself. And the material supervisor, Wayne Roberts, separated us. And that was my first day. And at that particular time, Wayne Roberts took Mr. Don Lee off to the side and told him everything that I had told him he was supposed to do as a supervisor. And he had to come back and do everything that I told him that he should have did initially. And from that point on, I worked for Mr. Don Lee one day.
That was the one day that you worked for?
That was the one day I worked for him. Next day, Barry came and got me. I forgot Barry's last name.
Barry Robinson?
Right. Barry Robinson came and got me and said, Wayne said, you probably work better for me. So, and me and Barry still probably friends right now today. So.
Now, I know he said, your height, how tall are you?
6'5".
Being 6'5", was that a hindrance for you in the assembly plant, or was it a help?
Very much so in trim versus body shop because of all the bending and so forth and so on that you have to take in order to get inside the car. Mm-hmm. I think the first job I did was putting carpet retainers, which had about 9-10 screws from front to back, and that was so I had to bend at a 45 degree angle to put in those screws all day, so that was very hard.
So a carpet retainer just holds the carpet down?
Yeah, just holds the carpet down. Mm-hmm. So it took, at that particular time, took about 7 screws. Right now, today, they're just snapping them in, but at that time, it was screwing them in, and that was my job. That was my first job at, consistent job at Fisher Body. Forget the other 4 jobs I did prior to.
So once you started working for Barry Robinson, mm-hmm. How long did you work for him?
I worked for him approximately, probably about 6 months to a year. And I think at that particular time, eventually I came with the idea that if I transferred to the body shop, it was easier on me being 6'5", because chances are in the body shop you can stand straight up and you don't have to get inside the car. And sure enough, that was a great idea on my part for me. Okay.
So coming from 2 particular plants, you had SBO and then you had Fisher Body before then. Those are the only 2 places that you've worked?
Right. Well, I had SBO Lansing, SBO Pontiac, and then Fisher Body. So I was driving 180 miles round trip every day from Lansing to Pontiac. Mm-hmm. I did that for 2 years, from 92 to 94.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So you had a chance to work in 2 other plants along with Fisher Body. Mm-hmm. What would you say it was like as far as people?
People, in general, basically, people at Fisher Body was, they're some of the greatest people I ever worked for. In general, because, like I said, we have one of the most educated workforce. You got people in there that's got degrees, so forth and so on. So my experience at Fisher Body has been great. I have learned a lot from the members that's in there. And
so during your time here, have you ever inquired any layoffs or strikes here at Lansing Fisher Body?
Yes, we had a strike in strike of 1998. It wasn't here at Fisher Body, but it was in Flint, so I had an opportunity to participate in a strike, which was one of the greatest experiences. I believe a prerequisite to any UAW person is walk the picket line. I think it's a good experience, so we can basically get what our forefathers did for us. So that was a good experience in 1998, was go to Flint and walk the picket line. But as far as a strike here personally at Fisher Body, no, I have not experienced it.
So you've been very supportive of strikes here and in the Lansing area and Flint?
The one in Flint, yes. I was the only one I had really in my GM history that in my 20 years that I have had a chance to be a part of.
So, do you have any other family members that work here?
I have a brother-in-law that works in a body shop. His name is Lewis Dixon. He has approximately about 28 years right now. And he was my, history of General Motors was my brother-in-law. Me and my wife, we've been together for, 29 years. And so I've known Lewis just about that long. And he's worked in the Fisher body for 28 years now. I think he's got approximately like 28 years. And so when I was in the military and I was communicating with him via Fort Benning, Georgia, and I was contemplating of what to do after I finished my time in service, he basically communicated to me and said, well, go ahead and get out. And, Fisher Body is taking applications, or General Motors is taking applications, and I proceeded to get out of the military November 3rd, 1984. I drove 12 hours straight through from Columbus, Georgia, and when I got here on the west side, because my brother-in-law stayed here on the west side, gave my wife a kiss, and she told me they're taking applications out at unemployment office. The line started at the front door of the unemployment office, and it went on the corner of Cedar and Jolly, and the end of the line was somewhere like Pickway. That was the end of the line, so I proceeded to get in line, and lo and behold, I had military preference because I was prior military, and I got picked,
Picked. How long would you say you stood in line?
Oh, probably about at least an hour, hour and a half at least,
Just to get in. Mm-hmm. So, when you hired in here and you went in the body shop, what's the biggest difference between body and trim?
Well, as I stated earlier in reference to the noise level, you can't wear shorts in the body shop, and you can wear them in trim. But far as the work intensity, honestly, I feel like the work in the body shop is better work, less intensive as trim. Because, with all the robots and so forth, chances are it was going to break down and you was going to get a break. In trim, it don't break down.
So, in how were your breaks in the body shop versus the trim shop?
Body shop, much better, because chances are that the technology of the robots would, like I said before, it would break down and you would at least get able to rest your body for, 15, 20 minutes. Sometimes you get a big gap in there. It could be an hour, 2 hour gap, depending on where it broke down.
So what, during those breaks, what did you and your coworkers do?
Wow. Basically conversate, visit, so forth and so on. And that basically was it, I wasn't one to go out to the bar or anything like that. Some people, they would go outside, eat lunch, whatever the case. But me, myself, I just sit there and wait.
Through your conversations and, having lunch with some of your coworkers, did you develop any friendships?
I think that here at Fisher Body or any assembly plant, it's kind of hard to develop relationships in general because you're isolated to that one particular spot or your area. So you basically conversate with or build a relationship with people that's in your particular area. I've ran into people around town and met them and they say, oh yeah, I work at Fisher Body and I've never seen them before in my life, but they do work here. It may be in a different area or whatever. So I think from a relationship standpoint, you build relationships in that particular area.
So do you mean like different areas, meaning body, paint, or trim? Or could it be a different part of body or a different part of trim?
Pretty much even itemize it out to your specific, where there may be front-end sheet metal. You may work in front-end sheet metal, and you never meet anybody over an underbody. That's how big of a distance it could be sometime,
Mm-hmm. So, during your time here, is that all you did was build cars?
No, 1990. I want to say. Let me look at my notes here. Because I've got notes. 1998. They had a election here for unemployment workers' comp rep, and it was a special election that was held because the previous election, the person had to resign or they got fired, or I think it was last name was Lowe, that's all I remember, Joe Lowe or something like that, and he got fired, so therefore they had to have a special election. So at that particular time, I had considered running for workers' comp unemployment rep because prior to that, my first position I had ran for was a sergeant of arms. I had ran for that prior to that in that same particular year. And so when the special election came back around, I considered running for workers' comp unemployment rep. So a lot of people tell me what a workers' comp unemployment rep did, and none of it was lining up with what was actual. So I came over and talked with Jerry Taylor, and basically at the particular time I didn't really know that I was really basically interviewing for a particular job, and if I was going to run for a job, I wanted to find out what was the particulars. People was telling me, oh yeah, the workers' comp unemployment rep, oh yeah, they make $100,000 a year, you know, that's how far some of the rumors went. So I came over and talked with Jerry, and me and him sat down for a good hour, and he told me all the particulars of the job, and so I considered, okay, I think it's something I'll run for. In the prior election, a guy named Derek Harris had ran for it also too, and he said, well, he was going to run again too in the special election. So I had met him out in the aisle and told him that, hey, I was considering running for workers' comp unemployment rep, and I just wanted to serve him notice that, give him enough respect to let him know that I was considering it also too. And it may have sounded somewhat arrogant or cocky or whatever you want to say, but I told him, I said, chances are I'm going to win. And I said, reason why? Because I had just ran for Sergeant Arms had lost in a runoff to Don Willems, and that surprised me in my first election at Fisher Body, and I had only been here 2 years. It took a runoff to beat me, and I remember Don Willems, which I give him a lot of credit because I always tease him and say he the one taught me how to campaign, you know, because once it got to a runoff, I actually felt within my mind that I could actually win this thing, you know, me being a Michigan fan and everything, you know, we're kind of arrogant. I actually thought I could win this thing, you know, and so I running for Sergeant Arms to the runoff, and I say, wow, maybe I can win this thing. And so I didn't take any vacation time. I was working on the line, and I remember my team leader, which real good guy named Bill. Bill would give me a couple of extra minutes on break so I could go campaign up in trim, and I'd run back and do parts and campaign on break. Lo and behold, Don ended up beating me, you know. And but that experience in itself had taught me so much because, one, if you're going to run for election in this plan, it's a must. You must take vacation time. That's the only way to walk that big monstrosity in there, is to take vacation time. So I learned that from Don. I did not know the layout of the plant or anything when I was campaigning, but after I lost to Don, that's why I went to Derek and told him, chances are I'm going to win it, because now I know how to campaign, I know I got to take vacation time, I know to get my literature, so forth and so on. But Don Willems taught me all of that. He really did.
So, was this the first time you ran, did you run in any of your other facilities for any offices?
No, I did not. I had not ran for any. I had been involved. I was a ergonomic monitor at SPO Lansing, as well as ergonomic monitor at SPO Pontiac. So, I had been involved also at SPO Lansing. I was a job developer / instructor at the Human Resource Center.
So, you ran, and you found that running an election in here is a lot like running a campaign outside Fisher Body.
Very much so, in time and money. Wow, you know, people consider they don't itemize the cost. And believe me, when I went back to my wife and told her I have to have more literature made up, she was like, "What you mean more literature? You just spent $200, and now you got to spend another $200, honey. That's the rules of the game. You can't just write out a date here and write a different date in there. People look at that as being non-professional."
How much literature would you say you passed out?
Wow. Well, and I would say I would always go get, if it was a 3,000 person membership, I would at least get 2,000 leaflets. And that's a given. I mean, that did it on demographics of what the membership was on a planned election. So you took the demographics of what your membership was, and you went from there.
When you did your campaigns, did you primarily do all your campaigning on your own? Did you get a team of people?
Primarily, first time, definitely on my own. The second time, because I did not necessarily know the layout of certain areas like paint. I have never worked in paint. I worked in body shop. I worked in trim. But I remember the first time I went up in paint, and it was like the supervisor came up to me and asked me what type of cologne I had on, and I thought it was smelling kind of good or something. He wanted to get some of it himself. Yeah, the first time a supervisor asked me what type of cologne I had on, I thought he wanted that same cologne, but he ended up explaining to me that they was getting bubbles in some of the cars, and I may have been the cause of it. So that alone scared me to death, and I turned around and left out of paint immediately. So the next campaign, when I went to paint, I had somebody to direct me and tell me where to go and so forth. I remember one guy, Derek Quinney, helped me out tremendously. Derek took me up in paint and took me in every area, took me in the booths and so forth and so on. And that was, you know, I'm very thankful to him for doing that for me, because I didn't know anything about that particular area, because some areas in that place you could be lost forever.
So you want to tell him a little bit about what you have to do to go and go into the paint department, because it affects our quality?
Yes. Well, basically my limited knowledge of paint, and because I'm pretty much body shop and trim, so in reference to once the air quality changes, that have a tendency to disrupt the equation of the paint. I mean, that's as expert as I got right there, you know, but that was my understanding of it.
So basically what happens when people are campaigning, they have to get what's called crater testing to find out if their body is going to damage the paint.
Yes. Yes.
And they blow air on them and see how it's going to affect the paint.
Yes.
So, you've done this, and for all of those people who don't understand, you were running for workers' compensation chair. What does a workers' compensation chair do? What is that job?
I always put a slash in there, unemployment / workers' compensation, because in between unemployment, that slash, and workers' compensation, it's like a million miles, because one, first of all, you got to know all the rules of the state of Michigan in reference to unemployment, and there's a million rules. And my job is just the first part of his unemployment rep is to try to have the membership or educate the membership in reference to some of these rules of the state of Michigan, because it will affect their livelihood very much so if they do not apply by the rules to the state of Michigan. A lot of people in reference to unemployment come to me and ask me, say, "What is the problem? The state of Michigan knows that we're laid off. Give me my money." And I have to explain to them that the rules, the unemployment rules for the state of Michigan, everybody have to adhere to them. General Motors, Ford, Chrysler, Delphi, everybody. And we must abide by those rules or it can affect you tremendously. One rule is you must call Marvin on your scheduled time, Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, alternative days, Thursday and Friday.
Marvin being?
Marvin, Michigan Automated Response Information Network. you must, and that's a touchtone system that basically that we have to call to apply for our unemployment. And once we are awarded our unemployment, that system automatically mates with our supplemental benefit, which is subpay. And approximately that unemployment is $362, and the sub could equate up to $450 to $500 a week. So for one call, it's going to basically get you $800-$900. So that's why I'm so very much very critical on people applying by the rules. And so that's my job, is to try to communicate to approximately 3,000, 3,500 people the same information, so they will not be deprived from their benefits, unemployment as well as supplemental benefit. And then you get into the slash, which is workers' compensation, and that right there is a whole together different set of state laws, okay? And to educate the membership in reference to state laws, to advocate, to go down to the Workers' Compensation Bureau and advocate for them in reference to their workers' compensation, or refer them to an attorney. Also to advocate unemployment. Also, too, if you break any of these rules, you have to go before an administrative law judge with the state of Michigan in order to prove your case. And I can do that as a union rep. I can advocate for them in reference to unemployment as well as workers' compensation. When it gets into medical issues, then you bring in doctors, so forth and so on, then the best thing for you to do is to refer them to an attorney. There's only two unemployment workers' compensation reps that I have run into in my limited time as being a UAW member, and that was me as well as Russ Emmons at 652, which he have taught me a lot also, too, by working with my counterpart, Russ Emmons, over at 652. But workers' compensation / unemployment rep is a pretty interesting job.
Is it a benefit that you think that a benefit and a union position that a lot of people don't quite understand?
I truly do believe that. I also want to bag up and go reference to my predecessors. One on my note is Jerry Taylor, and his son before me, Doug Fee. Fee or something, but I don't know all of them. But in reference to whoever came up with the idea to have an unemployment workers' compensation rep was some out-of-the-box thinking, because right now in the year 2005, if we didn't have an unemployment workers' compensation rep at this particular point in our journey as far as UAW members, it could be devastating to our membership right now. And I've been talked to a lot of other locals. I've been to conferences where the president was the unemployment workers' compensation rep. The president was the workers' compensation rep, the benefit rep, all of that. They handled everything that I handled. Some presidents did, and some of the other smaller locals you would go to. Another counterpart, Joe Sagey over at UAW 1618, he's a benefit rep, but he also handles unemployment. He also handles workers' compensation when he have to.
So all unions don't have workers' compensation?
I have to say this, I have never ran into another.
And it's not a mandate
besides,
to international?
No, I'm not sanctioned by the international union. If you bring up workers' compensation to the international union, they will refer you quickly to an attorney, fast and quick. So the only one I have ran into was Mr. Russ Emmons of UAW 652. We're the only two that I know of. Not saying that it's not others out there, but in my limited time, I have not ran into any other unemployment workers' compensation rep. So whoever thought about this, probably way before I was a UAW member, I give them kudos, because it was every UAW local needs a unemployment rep as well as workers' compensation rep. My opinion again.
So that means 602 once again, you know, sets the tone? That makes the face. That's all. What are some of the most, being the fact that you've been union active, are there any other committees or union organizations that you belong to?
Well, I'm a, I do mentoring with the LAMP program. This is the first year I have not mentored.
And LAMP
since
is?
Lansing, it's a partnership between Lansing Intermediate School District and the General Motors as well as UAW to basically teach high school seniors in reference to the manufacturing arena, also teaches them about labor history and basically the automotive industry. Basically to train up a skilled workforce, you have to first of all start at the school level, how young, but we're starting at the high school level, and basically there's a program that mentors high school students, and we do what you call job shadowing, and that means that they come in and they follow you around the job and see what you do and kind of get a hands-on experience of what the automotive industry is really about versus hearing from their parents or seeing it on TV and so forth. So I've been involved with that probably ever since it originated 7-8 years ago.
That's great. Even though you are basically a benefits rep in a sense, what would you say would be the most appreciated bargain benefit that we have?
You know, I like to clarify because I have a tendency to, my wife and everybody say a benefit rep, and I do not necessarily consider myself a benefit rep because we differentiate between our benefits that's negotiated via vacation, via holiday pay, so forth and so on, medical, legal, and so forth. I basically am an unemployment workers' compensation rep versus dealing with benefits. As far as the question in reference to me just as a regular UAW member, I think one of the most right now, the benefit that's, you know, above and beyond any organization that I've run across right now is SubPay. And reason why, because I know president of Local 724, Dean Pajali, and I talked with him, and I know that when his people got laid off at Lear, they get 26 weeks unemployment and no benefits in general. So the supplemental benefit as well as our medical benefits, I guess, is the two most critical areas right now in this day and time, in my opinion, again.
Since coming here in 1994, mm-hmm. what would you say is your best memory of working at Fisher Body Lansing?
Wow. That would be a hard one. And in reference to, in general, to being an opportunity to serve as a union rep is great job. People ask me, so how do you do that job? For some crazy reason, I like it. Maybe it's the opportunity to serve people. Maybe it's the opportunity to pick up the telephone and help a person get $1,500 that they was trying to pay their house note or something. Gives me chills to help people. And so being in a position to serve other people, I believe the law of reciprocity, what you do is going to come back to you, positive or negative. So, you know, I just look at it as doing a great thing, being able to help people with their livelihood in reference to workers' compensation, unemployment, whatever. I mean, that gives me thrills to know that this person has enough money to go to the grocery store and feed their family.
Okay. Given that you've had an opportunity to work in different facilities, mm-hmm. what would you say are the key elements that keeps Lansing Fisher Body workers a capital of quality?
Well, you know, I thought about that question a while ago. So one thing that in reference to Lansing, I've had the opportunity to talk with this lady that came from Detroit that She has two. She's a psychologist. I don't know if you guys talk with them. But they came in, and so everybody keeps saying that Lansing has one of the best workforces. You know, we hear it all the time, but I had the opportunity to question her that, because she stayed outside of Lansing, in reference to, is this true? And she told me, she says, we're the talk of GM headquarters when they hold a meeting, that Lansing always waived, they got the best workforce. So I thought about that in reference to why do Lansing have the best workforce in general? I guess I kind of came up with my own theory. You have Lansing itself, which is the hub, but if you look, we were talking about it earlier today, where so many people from outlying areas come into Lansing, and a lot of those people come from outlying areas, which is totally different culture than, per se, the city of Lansing. In other words, you have a lot of farm people that farm. I got friends work up in Trim that work an 8-hour day or 9-hour day, and then go home and jump on the combine until 12 at night. And I sit and talk with this guy and say, well, what is the thrill of going to jump on a combine until 12 o'clock at night, you know? And so he talked to me and just said, man, I just like to do it, man. I'm like, okay. Well, in my theory, again, I just think it's the point of people with work ethics coming into an area, and just, it's like a melting pot. Fisher Body is like a melting pot. It's like you get people of different race, different cultures, and we all come together for this 8, 9, 10-hour day with the same focus in mind. And I truly believe that that's an asset to Fisher Body. That's an asset to Fisher Body. I worked at Pontiac, and it was a different culture in Pontiac, okay? Wow, I mean, it was just different. I guess the best positive way to say it was different.
When you say different, how was it different? It was just the way that people communicated with each other? Is it the way we communicate with each other? What's different?
I think it was the way of the work ethics in general, or just, I mean, me personally, myself, I'm so thankful that I can have a high school diploma with a few college classes here and there and make the type of money I have. I put two kids so far through Michigan State University, even though I'm a Michigan fan. We'll talk about that later. Anyway, just in general is that it's just a work ethics. I remember working in Pontiac and the supervisor telling me, I'm saying, well, because I was driving 180 miles every day, and we were scheduled for Saturday, I would go to the supervisor and say, I can't make it because I'm driving all week. I haven't seen my kids. I was on second shift. So when I went to work, my kids were still in school. And when I came home, they were asleep. So I would say, I can't work Saturday. And he said, well, Harold, go ahead and, you know, go ahead and take off, you know, even though it was mandatory Saturdays. You know, he says, he told me, he says, you're here more than the people that work here in Pontiac. And I was driving 90 miles one way to get to work. So I think it's the work ethics that Lansing has. I think it's the attention to detail as far as wanting to build a quality product. I've heard people say if they could bottle this up and sell it to the rest of General Motors, they would be rich. So what is it specifically? I don't know. Just my own theory.
Do you think that having, well, I guess actually working in the body shop, did they have a good gender mix in the body shop?
You know,
and did that make a difference at all?
I don't think it really made a difference. I really didn't pay that much attention to it because as far as I'm concerned, it was like you had females to do the same job that the men did. I've never seen a job that was said, you know, specifically that a man had to do or specifically that a woman had to do. So I never really been able to tell any difference.
If you were to speak with new hires or a person thinking about coming in to work at Lansing Fisher Body, UAW Local 602, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to get a mentor. Find somebody that's from a positive side to duplicate. I mean, somebody that has a good work record, somebody that's on time and to duplicate. This person got 25 years and never missed a day or whatever the case, I mean, or from a quality standpoint, I would basically, if it was my company, I would appoint a mentor specifically to that new hire, because I've seen them come in and I've seen them be infiltrated with negativism or I can't do this, this is hard, so forth and so on, versus just throwing them to the wolves, because I've seen them go to the wolves. And new hires either in 1995 or 1997, I've seen them come in and I've seen them quit.
What would you say to the young people about the UAW, Local 602?
I guess I would say, to the point of, be willing to sacrifice, pay your dues. Seniority has its privileges. I was in the military, same thing. Rank had its privileges. Be willing to sacrifice. I feel like the person that I am right now, I would not be unless I drove that 180 miles round trip every day. Believe me, it brought some humility to me, to the point that I learned to appreciate, because when I bought my house in 1989, after I hired in 1985, I bought it on the south side of Lansing, and I was 5 minutes away from my house, and lo and behold, 4 years into my GM career, I was driving an hour and 15 minutes every day. So that had a tendency to bring some humility to me and taught me how to appreciate what I have versus wishing it was better, I guess you would say. So,
Harold, you worked for three different local unions then, with the two SBO facilities and the Fisher Body facility. Can you tell me the difference between the union representation? Was it the same at all the facilities, or was there something special about Local 602's representation at the Fisher Body plant?
Well, I go back to my original plant, which was Local UAW 1753. I give UAW Local 1753 the credit for me even getting involved. A guy by the name of Mr. Rick Graham was the, wasn't the president at the time, but he was the president prior at 1753 in that particular time. He worked at the Human Resource Center. And I was in the job bank, and they asked for volunteers, and I volunteered to go work at the Human Resource Center, which Rick was the, it was a joint program between General Motors and UAW, and Rick Graham was the UAW side, and a lady by the name of Sandy Novak was the GM side, worked at the Human Resource Center for laid-off workers. And I started out doing a phone survey to call laid-off workers in to make them aware of some of the benefits that was available to the laid-off workers, whether it was via resume writing, job developing, so forth and so on. And so I did the phone survey, and then I did that for a while, and then Rick gave me an opportunity to interview as a job developer instructor, where I actually taught employability skills workshop class. Basically, I taught them how to get a job, taught them interviewing skills, videotaped them, so forth and so on, and then critiqued them. But by me getting that job, Rick told me, he says, there's one criteria that if I pick you for this job, you must do. And I said, what's that, Rick? He said, you must attend union meetings. And from that point on, I've been going to union meetings. Then I transferred to Pontiac, which was kind of hard to drive up there on Sundays and go to union meetings. So I wasn't too active as far as Pontiac was concerned because of the mileage. But I was involved as far as ergonomic monitor or whatever. But the representation in general, 1753, pretty good local representation, not on the basis of numbers wise. We had about 1,200 people at the time. But 653 was my local in Pontiac, and that was an amalgamated. So a little bit different politics involved when you're in an amalgamated local versus non-amalgamated. It was pretty much you presented your caucus, 653, and either your caucus was accepted or not accepted. Simple as that. Wasn't no ifs, wasn't no ands, wasn't no buts. But when I came to Local 602, which was totally different, it was a non-caucus-based local, and somebody like me that had only been in Fisher Body for 2 years to run for an election and take a runoff to beat me spoke loud and clear that this place was a place of equal opportunity. And that stood out tremendously to me because, you know, I had friends in here because I was from Lansing, but at the same time, from a local standpoint of Fisher Body knowing me, nobody knew me. I had just came from Pontiac. I had only been here 2 years. But the representation in general, 602, boy, we really lay it on as far as information-wise, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a part of the leadership, but I know personally myself, if I needed help in any area, I can call from the president to the chairman to committee mans to zones. It's not just me as a unemployment workers' compensation rep. It's the people that support me via the president all the way down to the committee man on the line to the people in the plant. So good local for representation. I've heard other people say it, but I've experienced it.
Harold, when you say leadership, can you tell how the leadership of Local 602 differs from other local unions?
In general, because most of my union experience has been right here at Local 602, very open door policy. If you got a problem, it won't be a "I'll get back with you," okay, and never get back with you. Their point of trying to answer your question for you, if not, get it to you fast, quick, mm-hmm. or they will get back with you. So
as a unemployment workers' compensation chairperson, being part of the leadership, do you get to make decisions on what Local 602 does?
In reference to unemployment workers' compensation, I have been pretty much with my particular office. I'm kind of like, you know, a man out on the island. You know, whatever I say is going to go to the point where the leadership, I have brought some things to the leadership, and they probably scratch their head like, well, what is this guy coming up with? But they've supported me. I came up with I remember years ago, my predecessor, Jerry, he used to pass stuff down the line, and he would come in the plant and pass it down the line, where me, I came up with the bright idea of, if I cover all gates, I can communicate to 99% of everybody, because everybody's coming through one, two, no more than three gates, so therefore, I can get close to 100% as possible in order to communicate the same information. And again, I'm afraid to take credit for it myself because I had a lot of help, Doc 46ers, committee men, so forth and so on, that's willing to support me in me communicating the correct information to the masses. See, that's the task, is that, and I always tease people and say, one thing we make more at Fisher Body, more so than cars, is rumors. And that's what I try to dispel, is any type of rumors by coming up with that, as well as the Burma board, which is, I came up with that one via the management also gave me the opportunity to just start communicating stuff across that board over there in reference to when to call Marvin and when to turn in your paperwork and so forth.
And the Burma board is, for those people who don't know what the Burma board is?
Electronic board communication system inside the plant that communicates both on this side right here as well as chassis.
But now, as far as, because you're in an elected position and being a part of the leadership, do you not sit on the executive committee?
Yes, I do sit on the executive board.
Is that a position that is common for local unions?
I don't think it is in reference to my position, but again, my position is, like I said, I've only run into one other one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. All right. Thank you for your time.
Wow. Okay.